This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Blum hits it into right, down the line. It is gone. Jeff Blum, the former Astro, goes deep. And here in the 14th inning, the White Sox take a 6-5 lead.
That's fairly memorable for people in this town. 14th inning of Game 3 for Jeff Blum. You think he tires of hearing that home run call? I'm betting against it.
Not till he's a very old man, maybe 100 years old, and maybe not even then. As we bring in the television broadcaster for the Houston Astros and a longtime friend, at least since 2005, and I go back further than that with him with his... damage that he did with the Chicago Cubs years ago, as Jeff Blum joins us on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning.
Hey, it's good to be on with you guys. I will never get tired of hearing that, and I also appreciate the fact that you brought up I had success against the Cubs and success as a White Sox.
Yes, indeed. You're remembered for success, which not every player gets that. Gets that feeling, especially being part of a world championship team. Jeff, we're talking about the Astros, and tonight both the Yankees and Astros are going to have a bullpen night. Certainly something different than back when you played not that very long ago. Where do you think the advantage is going into Game 6 other than the Astros being at home for potentially two games?
I think that might be the only advantage. I thought the rainout was actually going to push back everybody and create an opportunity for the Astros to do what they did against the Tampa Bay Rays, where forcing the opponent to go through Greinke, Verlander, and Cole to try and advance. And it obviously worked in the first round with the Astros beating the Rays and getting to the championship series. But I think that it's going to be interesting today because we're probably going to see some guys we haven't seen in the series, most notably Jose Urquidy for the Houston Astros. It'll be interesting to see how he handles the pressure. Brian Abreu's had his issues in early in this series, so is he going to be okay to go in this game today? But there are a couple of pieces out there for Aaron Boone, most notably Ottavino, who's having a tough time coming out of that bullpen. So, and these guys have been taxed a little bit for the New York Yankees, so I wonder how Aaron Boone's going to be able to play those matchups. So I think that both managers are kind of hoping that they can get at least three innings out of whoever opens tonight's game up.
Yeah, it's interesting. Immediately when the rainout happened and you're like four games in 4 days, I thought to myself, boy, the Yankees are screwed because of the way they use their bullpen. Mm-hmm. But last night, Tommy Canley threw 8 pitches. Zach Britton threw 18, so maybe he's not a heavy usage guy tonight, if at all. And Aroldis Chapman only threw 9. So, look, the way we see it in this town, Aroldis Chapman could throw 4 innings tonight and 3 innings tomorrow, but that's Joe Maddon in 2016 talking. But, it's interesting. Without Ottavino, though, as you mentioned, Aaron Boone really does have the hands tied. Huge advantage now back to the Astros. Why is Wade Miley not on this roster? They decided they were going to do this, a bullpen game, as opposed to giving Wade Miley a start, right?
Unfortunately for Wade Miley, it's purely because of what happened in the month of September, because for 5 months, Wade Miley was arguably the third best pitcher in that 5-man rotation right behind Cole and Verlander. It was Wade Miley who was going out there and doing a great job. And then September happened. I'm not sure if it was fatigue. I'm not sure if it was mentality, but I think eventually by the end of the season, it was a combination of fatigue and mentality because he was having a hard time getting out of the first inning. So I think that's where it kind of scared A.J. Hinch, Brent Strom, the pitching coach, off a little bit and put guys like Urquidy and Brian Abreu on that roster. It's very interesting to see that happen, but you're right in the sense that of the guys that are stretched out and maybe able to go out there and give you 3 to 5 innings, there were only two guys in September that would have been able to do that in the playoffs for you. It was Wade Miley and Jose Urquidy, But the way that Wade's month of September went, where he had a 10-plus ERA, they backed off him and put Jose Urquidy into that situation.
Chicago White Sox World Series hero Jeff Blum joins us on Inside the Clubhouse. I know that's never going to get old to hear. Never. Not for you or any of your teammates back then. And you know, I bring it up again only because, you know, we appear to have a managerial race that's down to David Ross and Joe Espada, who's the bench coach for the Astros and who you've been able to watch in action over the last couple of years. And you were very much a teammate like David Ross. You weren't always a starter, but when you played, you always performed. When you were in the clubhouse, you were always considered somebody as a go-to guy and a guy that people could trust in what he said. When you look at Ross, and then you can maybe help us with Espada, what differences do you see as far as the qualities that they might bring to the table?
Wow, that's a really good question because, you know, I obviously have experience with Joe Espada here in Houston with him being the bench coach for the Astros the last 2 years, so I've created a relationship with him. But I've also known David Ross for quite a while, too, and I appreciate both of them. They've both got very good mentalities as far as the game is concerned, and obviously we've seen the track record of managers that have been catchers in the past, and I think that goes a long way because those catchers behind home plate see the whole field in front of them. They have to manage the pitcher's attitude, the psychology, manage the game plan back there behind home plate. But they also understand the mechanics of the game, the fundamentals. So they've got a very good vision in front of them on how they think the game should unfold. And having played, I'm sure David Ross, having played with several teams, working with several managers, has picked up on a couple of keys along the way. He's also got the name equity in the city. That always goes a long way. He's got a media experience, which I'm finding out these days is a huge asset to have if you're going to be a major league manager because of the attention you get. But on the other hand, Joe Espada is a guy, and don't discount David Ross's experience as a player in the big leagues. That might be the only thing that is lacking for Joe Espada. But Joe Espada, a career minor league guy who's worked himself into a situation where he was a third base coach for the Miami Marlins, a third base coach for the New York Yankees. So being with the Yankees, I think, gives him a lot of street credibility as far as understanding media markets, understanding the pressures of playing in a major market, and understanding how to work with some of these players. And then being a bench coach for A.J. Hinch has been a huge benefit, too, because you're learning how to manage a team that is highly analytical. So you're learning how to balance the numbers and the personalities on the field and working with a front office who's going to kind of be in your office quite a bit offering some information. So I think that's where Joe benefits a little bit. And just a little inside secret on Joe Espada, this dude wants to win. He wants to manage. He wants to manage a good team. He wants to manage good players, and he wants to make them better. There's a fire inside Joe Espada that I think is ready to put him in that manager seat and really lead the charge for some of these guys here in the major leagues. Whether he gets the job in Chicago or someplace else, I know he's interviewed around, but he is a guy who is going to be chomping at the bit to lead some of these guys, and I think he's excited about it too.
Well, that's what we don't know about, and that's what I think they needed to find out in their interview, is that fire, because personality-wise, I think David Ross is exactly what they've been looking for in a post-Madden dugout to get on some guys, to get on their backsides, but be likable, sort of, when needed in that same way. Mm-hmm. Does Espada have that kind of edge to his personality that he can hold people accountable and yet still be respected and not hated?
Yeah, and I think the only challenge that Joe Espada might have is not having that Major League Baseball experience because, David Ross can move into a situation where he has had to be that hard ass a little bit and have to motivate guys, yet he's still that guy you're going to have to travel with 190 days a year and create that relationship. So Joe Espada is a guy who's going to have to earn that a little bit, as opposed to David Ross, who might move into the situation and already have that built into the situation. But I think that Joe Espada is going to have no problem doing that because he's got superstar talent right now in Houston. So he's understanding how to work with the personality of guys who have the spotlight on them, motivate them to win. And again, he's working with a club who has been to the World Series and won it. And now he's creating, an opportunity for these guys to get back to the World Series. And sometimes that's a tough thing to do. And I think what gets discounted for bench coaches is that they are they're seen as a guy who is just a gopher or a, you know, a personal assistant for the manager. And I don't believe that's the case with A.J. Hinch. I think A.J. Hinch puts a load on top of Joe Espada and has expectations to him to kind of be that second manager in the dugout.
Jeff, when you look at Ross crossing over from being a guy that could get in John Lester, John Lackey's face as a friend, as a teammate, as a trusted ally, compared to maybe having to do the same thing as a manager rather than a guy that's out on the field trying to win ball games with them, how do you delineate between the two? How do you divide up where that's going to be successful or not? How difficult is that transition of having played with 10 of these guys on a world championship team and now trying to lead them but not be one of their teammates any longer?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and that's where I, you know, other guys in the clubhouse are going to kind of watch that relationship, because I think when you're playing on a major league team, you want to be treated as equals. I know that superstars and some of the better talent are going to get a little more leniency, so to speak, or they're going to be treated a little bit differently. But I think that's where David Ross moves in, has a nice big team meeting, explains who he is, what he expects from these guys, and then you start to have those individual meetings with guys one by one, and eventually you're going to have guys like John Lester in there or some of the other teammates you've been playing with, and you're going to have to sit down and go, look, I love you to death. We were teammates. We did some crazy stuff in the past. We were teammates having a good time, but now the expectation is me to lead this team to a World Series championship, and I can't do that if I can't expect you to go out there and perform and allow me to manage. So I think it's an expectation between David Ross of John Lester to help him be that leader in the clubhouse, but also understand that when push comes to shove, it's going to be a little more shove than push than it has in the past. But I think David Ross has got the skills, and I think he's got the respect of guys, you know, some of these veterans like John Lester, to be able to go out there and do that. And let's be honest, baseball is changing. The managers are getting younger. The analytics have moved in. So I think that there's an opportunity for John Lester to really show how some of these veteran guys can work with an ex-teammate, ex-player, and now manager. I think it should be pretty interesting to see how some of that unfolds.
Boy, it's a real fascinating debate between these two, because it stands as a template for a lot of times what happens in baseball. Do you bring in somebody from the outside and then mold them to how you operate personally, or do you bring in somebody that you know personally is going to be fabulous, but then have to have them kind of adjust their relationships and bring in stuff? These kind of conversations go on everywhere.
And Jeff, you saw it a million times as a player, where you saw this up and back between the Durkers and the Garners and different people, as to how they want to go about it.
Yeah, Aaron Boone's another guy that's moved from the booth to the manager seat. So I think that, you know, there's been precedent set, but at the same time, you're right. It is a matter of, do you want the comfortability of knowing what you're going to get from David Ross, or maybe you have a relationship where you can, I don't want to say manipulate, but maybe encourage him to make some different decisions, whereas Joe Espada may come in and he's a little bit of a wild card. But I think that's why they have these extensive interviews, and they have done a very good job of trying to figure out who these guys are before you hire them as managers. But I think I would imagine that these teams, especially the Cubs, they don't want to bring in a guy that's going to, say in 2 years they're going to blow it up and move him out of there. I would love to see a major league team go out there, do their due diligence, find a guy that they like, and really give him an opportunity to go out there and establish himself in that clubhouse and establish himself as a manager, and let them go try and win in 3 or 4 years.
Hey, Jeff, last thing for you. Really appreciate the time. What's the genius of the Astros in terms of offense? I know what they do with pitching, but how have they gotten Springer and Bregman to be better contact hitters over the course of the last few years? How do they lead the league in contact as an offense?
Man, you know what? That's one of the things that I've been most impressed with, because as a major league player, I wasn't a low strikeout guy. I wasn't a high strikeout guy. I had moments where I knew where the zone was. I had moments where I had no clue where the zone was. But the consistency is what blows my mind. And what's crazy, what you just talked about, is that George Springer is an organizational guy, drafted and developed. Alex Bregman, an organizational guy, drafted and developed. And it seems to be the Astro way is how they develop these guys to have such good strike zone command. And obviously it takes a lot of practice. There's repetition in there to be able to understand what the strike zone is. But I think it's, you also have to instill a confidence in these guys to know that as a player, I can go out there and lay off some pitches or maybe take a borderline pitch. My manager, my hitting coach won't yell at me, and they won't get upset at me for being late in the count. And they've created a mentality as hitters where if you do take pitches, you don't panic. And I think that's where the Astros have been very good, because even if they take borderline pitches or they fall behind, you really don't see them panic too much during the regular season. We've seen it a little bit in the postseason, which kind of is interesting to me, but the pitching is better in the postseason. But they have done a very good job as an organization to teach and help these guys understand that you can stay tight with your zone and be incredibly successful. And in doing so, when you lay off those pitches and don't chase, you force the pitcher into the strike zone, and that's where they get their success, is when the pitcher realizes they're not getting the chase, they've got to throw a strike, and eventually it gets hammered.
Jeff, Matt and I really appreciate your time and expertise. It's been a fun 15 minutes here. We really appreciate it. How often do you wear the White Sox championship ring? And when you look at it, do you do anything but smile?
No, it brings back incredible memories. It's good being on with you guys. It's always good to talk to the city of Chicago. You know, I still get, you know, it's fun coming into the city and knowing that people are more than welcoming when I come to the south side still, even though it's close to 14, 15 years. But that ring definitely sits in front of the Houston Astros championship ring for a lot of reasons, most notably because I can actually wear it and I can get my hand in my pocket. But the other reason is because I won it as a player, and that's what means the most to me, is understanding that I was a part of something great as a player at the top level of my game. And obviously, you know, the personalities that were on that 05 team, everybody asks me, especially being around this Astros team right now, as good as they are, they always ask, what was it like being on a World Series championship team? And I never run out of stories to tell about the 2005 White Sox.
Look, we'll do a whole segment on hitting home runs from both sides of the plate against the Cubs next time we have you on, because that's also near and dear. And I remember being at that game, and it was fun to watch as well. Jeff, thanks a lot. Good luck to the Astros, and we'll talk to you down the line. Thanks again.
I look forward to it. You guys have a good Saturday.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff Blum of Houston TV, also a star of the World Series Game 3, a home run in the 14th inning to give them a victory in a improbable, to say the least, sweep of the Houston Astros in 2005.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.